Okay, so today we'll be covering all the halachas of Rosh Hashanah. Every day, Baruch Hashem, I send out two halachas a day. It's a free email service that goes to a couple hundred people. Actually, if you'd like to sign up, you can let me know at avizakutinsky@gmail.com. That's avizakutinsky@gmail.com. So I send out the two halachas, and this time of year, even two halachas is not enough. And a lot of people have questions about the halachas and minhagim of the Rosh Hashanah. So, and maybe I'll give a separate share on Yom Kippur and Sukkot, but for now, we'll just cover Rosh Hashanah. I'll try to cover the Shofar and everything included in Rosh Hashanah. So, before we even get to Rosh Hashanah, on Rotzei Shabbos, Ashkenazim begin reciting Slichas. Sfaradim have been saying Slichas since the second day of Elul, but Ashkenazim begin this Motzei Shabbos, and we have about 8 days of Slichas. So just to mention some halachas regarding slichas. Again, the purpose of this year is not to cover everything, but just to cover some of the more important things, more of the background on some certain topics. So when it comes to slichas, first of all, the first night of slichas, it's customary for everyone to recite it at chatzos. Chatzos is 1 in the morning, I think 12:55 in New York. So it's customary to recite slichas at 12:55. The reason is because Api Kabbalah, from the time of Ma'ariv until Chatzos, it's a time of Dinim. It's a strong time of Dinim where there's a tremendous amount of judgment, and therefore it's not a good time to recite Slichas. But from Chatzos on, that's when Rachamim and Rachman begins, and therefore it's more appropriate to recite Slichas. So therefore, throughout the next week, it's customary for people to recite Slichas right before Shacharis, early in the morning before Shacharis. And according to some Paiskim, that's even preferred. However, the first night, to show Zerizim Makdimin that we don't want to wait for Shacharis, we do it at 1 in the morning, the first moment that it's allowed to do. So, a couple things about Slichas. First of all, when you do it early in the morning, you should recite Birchas HaTorah first. It's a big shaila amongst the poskim whether you're allowed to recite Tehillim, to recite Psukim. We know that before Birchas HaTorah, you're not allowed to learn Torah. The question is, are you allowed to recite Torah as part of davening before Birchas HaTorah? It's a debate. According to the Ramah, you're allowed to. According to the Ramah, you're allowed to recite Torah as long as it's not learning Torah. It's part of davening. That's allowed. I know the Baal Tanya is chaylik. That's why even if you look in the Siddurim, like the Nusach Ari Siddur, he puts Berachas HaTorah before any psukim. The average Nusach Sfarad Siddur, if you look by the time it gets up to Berachas HaTorah, you have said many psukim before then. So for Slichas, it's customary to recite Berachas HaTorah if you can. Now, the major issue, there's two major shilas when it comes to slichas that I want to talk about very quickly for the next few minutes. One is the paragraph called Machnisei Rachamim. There's a very, very controversial paragraph at the end of slichas called Machnisei Rachamim, where we potentially address the Malachim. Machnisei Rachamim, Yachnisus Rachamenu. Avram Fried made it very famous with a beautiful song, but it's basically asking the Machnisei Rachamim, the Malachim who bring the Rachamim into Hashem, Yachnisus Rachamenu, to do their job very nicely. There were many, many, many big Rabbonim. We're going back to the times of the Maral, Miprag, you're talking about 500-600 years ago, that were very against this tefillah. And this is an overall larger Shaila, and that is, and I wrote about this recently in a Sefer, but it's a very common Shaila, and that is, when you are you allowed to daven to Malachim directly? And are you allowed to daven to those that are passed away directly when you're by a kever? What this means is very simple, just in a nutshell, mamish in 1 minute. You cannot ask a Malach or a person that passed away to help you directly. Meaning, if someone is, let's say, doesn't have money and he needs parnasa, if you ask a Malach or a tzaddik that passed away, you go to Lubavitcher Rebbe's kever, you go to, you know, the Rabbi Koilel's kever in Queens, you go to Remeir Balanes in Eretz Yisrael, you go to a tzaddik's kever and you say, tzaddik, I need money, please send me money, please help me, bring me money. That's Aser Avodah Zarah. That's Avodah Zarah. That's asking, that's giving koyach to someone that's other than Hashem, and that's mamish Aser. That everyone agrees with. The question is, can you ask a Malach to do his job and bring your tefillahs to Hashem? Or can you go to a kever and you ask the nifter, please go to Hashem and daven for me? So on the one hand, it should be allowed because you're clearly not giving them koach. You're asking them to be a messenger to go to Hashem. On the other hand, there were some rabbanim that were against this because they felt that using them as an intermediary can lead to negative things. It could be confused as Avodah Zarah. Not the Chas HaShalom, it's Avodah Zarah, but it could lead to bad things. It's close enough. We know famously the Mishnah Berurah, I'll just mention it now. There's a minig on Erev Rosh Hashanah to go to a kever. It's brought down by the Ramah, that minig on Erev Rosh Hashanah to go to Kibbutz Tzadikim. The Mishnah Berurah says, though, you have to be very careful when you go to Kibbutz Tzadikim that you don't talk directly to the tzaddik that passed away, because we don't do that, says the Mishnah Berurah. What do you do? He says, Al Yisim Megamasai El Nifter, you don't talk directly to the Nifter. What do? You go to, let's say, Lubavitch Rebbe's Kever, and you say, Hashem, in the Schus, Lubavitch Rebbe, please help me. So you're not addressing them directly, you're talking to Hashem. So based on that premise, many Paiskim equate Niftarim with Malachim. That is the same. Rav Moshe Feinstein had a tshuva where he said it might be better, it might be worse, but let's assume that they're the same, because that's the assumption of many Paiskim. So according to the Mishnah Berurah, you cannot ask the Niftar, a tzaddik that passed away, to daven for you. That would be inappropriate. So too, when you go Machnisa Rachim, it would also be inappropriate. You can't ask Malachim to do a job for you. So there were many Rabbanim that were against this tefillah. I think I remember my yeshiva, they had a sign about whether they say it or whether they don't say it. It's a very, very controversial thing. Rav Moshe Feinstein brings down in Chelek Ches of Igros Moshe that his father wouldn't actually say Baruchuni L'Shalom on Friday night, because you don't ask Malachim to bless you. He would omit that stanza. However, this tefillah Machnis Erachim was instituted by many, many big tzaddikim from the Rishonim. And there were definitely many that were lenient. And they felt that it can't be Avodah Zarah. It can't even be misconstrued of Avodah Zarah. You're just asking them to do your job. And for Haraya, the common custom is to say Baruchuni L'Shalom on Friday night. So that's definitely what to rely on. When it comes to Erev Rosh Hashanah, going to the Kvarim, just in general, although the Mishnah Berurah was against asking the Nifter to daven for you, to be a Melitz Yosher for you, many, many big Rabbanim, the Munkacher, many big Rabbanim, Vitcher Meyer, Morgenstein, Shlita, has a tshuva about this, where he says that the common custom amongst many Hasidim is to be lenient and to go to a tzaddik and to say, tzaddik, please be a Melech Yosha, please daven for me. Not to say that you should help me, but please daven for me. And that it definitely, if one wants to rely on that, and if it helps your experience going to Gvarim, you definitely have what to rely on. Even if you notice, by a lot of funerals, they say that the nifteres or the nifter should be a melitz yosher for the mishpacha. So that definitely seems to be on the more lenient side. But like I said, it's a machlokas, and you ask a shayla. But that's the machnisei rachman. The other famous issue with slichas is the time. I mentioned before that the first time to do slichas is chatzos. Many times in shuls, I believe, especially amongst the young Israels, you have minyanim that recite slichas before chatzos. Chatzos is 12:55. That means that if you have a minyan for slichas at night, at like 10 o'clock, 10:30, the question is whether that's allowed. So, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, and he says it's definitely not preferred, because it's at a time where, according to Kabbalah, he says it's not that it's usher, but it's not going to be accepted as well, and therefore it's definitely not preferred, but if you have no alternative, you have what to rely on. Now, there's two comments about that tshuva for Rav Moshe. First of all, a lot of people that go to those minyanim, if they wanted to, they can get to a minyan in the morning. They're going there for a convenience. For convenience, even Rav Moshe would have a problem with it. Rav Soloveitchik and Nefesh HaRav, and Pnini HaRav, Rav Shechter quotes that Rav Soloveitchik a couple times when he was older and he had no choice, he would daven at those type of minyanim to recite slichas at 10 or 10:30, and he would always say the same thing: this is not preferred, and I just have no choice. So first of all, if you have an alternative to go to just to wake up 20 minutes early, 30 minutes earlier, you have to. The question is Rav Moshe's tshuva accepted? Rav Moshe held that you could b'dieved daven at that time, say slichas at that time, at 10 or 10:30, because although it's not preferred, but b'dieved it's fine. That's not so poshut. Rav Avadya Yosef in Chazan Avadya has a very famous tshuva where he quotes the Ramaz. The Ramaz was a Mekubal, a Talmud of Chaim Vital, and he writes that saying slichas before chatzos is aser. He uses very harsh lashonis, and Rav Avadya Yosef says when Rav Moshe Feinstein said that it's not aser and therefore b'dieved you could rely on it, that's not so pasha, because if you look at the sources amongst the Mekubalim, it could be it is aser. So therefore Rav Avadya says it's aser to daven at those minyanim. So what do you do if you have no alternative? He says two things. One is you can get a minyan together to say slichas before mincha. You daven mincha at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, so have a half hour early. Or say b'yechidus in the morning. Say b'yechidus. that's preferred to say it without a minyan than to say it in a minyan at the wrong time. Now, if you're going to say Slichas B'Yechidus, there's two things you have to be aware of. One is the Yugam Midas HaRachmim, Hashem Hashem Kelracham Echanon, is not allowed to be said without a minyan. Now, according to many Paiskim, and this is the opinion of the Mishnah Berurah, you're allowed to say Hashem Hashem Kelracham Echanon without a minyan if you say it as a leaning, like you say it like a Chav Hashem Hashem Kelracham Echanon, meaning you say it like it's leaning from the Torah, not as a tefillah. But even that, there were many Rabbanim that were against. I believe the minyan of Chabad is not to say it at all. So therefore, you have to ask a Shaila. There were many Rabbanim that felt that you can't say it at all, even as leaning as a trup. It's still better not to. The second issue with saying Slichas without a minyan is the tefillas of Machay Machasya. There's a couple tefillas at the end of Slichas, right before Tachanun, that are in Aramaic. The halacha is that you cannot say tefillas in Aramaic without a minyan. When you're davening without a minyan, the Gemara tells us in Saita, you need your tefillas to be schlepped before you. You need your tefillas to be schlepped before Hashem by a malach. As we said before, the machnisei rachamim, you're asking them to do their job. It's required for a malach to schlep your tefillas. The Gemara tells us that malachim do not recognize Aramaic. They don't understand Aramaic. And because they don't understand Aramaic, they will not bring your tefillas without a minyan. If you daven in Aramaic, they won't understand it. So if you daven without a minyan, you can't say tefillas in Aramaic. Now, when you're davening with a minyan, you don't need a malach. Hashem directly takes the tefillas, and Hashem obviously knows every language. So therefore, when you're davening without a minyan, you can't say tefillas in Aramaic. So those tefillas have to be skipped. Even if you notice in the Siddur, if you look on Shabbos day by Yukim Porkin, right after laning, the art scroll Siddur, you'll notice it says not to say this without a minyan, because Yukim Porkin is Aramaic. Okay. Fine. That's Slichas. We're going to run through Yom Tov, to the best of my abilities. Erev Rosh Hashanah is a fast. A lot of people aren't aware of this. Not only is it a fast day, an Erev Rosh Hashanah, it's such a fast that the Mishnah Berurah brings down, you don't have to accept it beforehand because it's a Tainus Tzibur, it's a public fast day. It's common knowledge, even though most people aren't aware of it. Now, how long this fast lasts, according to the common custom is to break it by Chatzos. Actually, the common custom is not to do it at all because most people aren't aware of it, but it really is a fast. And you should fast until Chatzos if you can. If you're not feeling well, fine, you can break it like any other fast. But if you're able to fast until Chatzos, it's brought down by the Shulchan Aruch. Hataras Adarim is said on Erev Rosh Hashanah. There's a whole, in the Siddur, there's a whole text of it. It's said with three members of a Bezdin. The halacha is that the Bezdin can be related to each other for Hataras Adarim. So you get three people together, you say that Hataras Adarim. Now, women customarily, although most Paiskim assume that women are obligated to say Hataras Adarim, the common custom Rosh Hashanah says is not to say Hataras Adarim for women. Some say it for their wife. They'll get up and say, I'm doing Hataras Adarim for my wife. But A, that's only for married women. Single women, nobody does that for. And even for married women, the common custom is not to do that. So they rely on the Kol Nidre tefillah to be matzah their Nidarim. Two more things about Erev Rosh Hashanah, then we'll jump into Rosh Hashanah. One is that I mentioned before Kibri Tzadikim, that there's an Indian to go to Kibri Tzadikim and Erev Rosh Hashanah. And as I said, it's a shayla of how to daven. According to the Mishnah Berurah, many Paiskim, you have to just talk directly to Hashem and say, Hashem, in the schus of this great tzaddik, please answer my tefillas. According to others, you're allowed halachically to ask the tzaddik to daven for you, to send them as a shliach, to be a melech yosher for you. I just want to make one interesting point from the Chassam Sofer. The Mishnah Berurah was against asking the tzaddik to daven for you. He felt that you talk directly to Hashem, there's no such thing as an intermediary, there's no such thing as a shliach. So the question that you could ask is, then what's the point of going to a tzaddik for a bracha? Right? It's been an age-old custom going down to the times of Shmuel Hanavi that you go to tzaddikim that are alive and you ask them to daven for you. So what's the difference? If I'm not allowed to do it when they're dead, why am I allowed to do it when they're alive? What's the difference? If hashkafically we only turn to God and we don't use anyone in between, then why would I use a living tzaddik in between? So the Chassam Sofer says something very interesting, and it's very, very sweet of how it's supposed to be looked at. The Chassam Sofer says the reason why you're allowed to go to a living tzaddik, according to everybody, is because when you go to a tzaddik and you tell him your pain, the tzaddik hopefully feels your pain. And now when the tzaddik davens, he's not davening as a shliach for you, he's davening for himself, because he wants to alleviate his own pain. That's how it's fundamentally different. Okay, it's a nice thought. Last thing is, there's a minig to go to the mikveh on Erev Rosh Hashanah. The minig, the Mishnah Berurah brings down, you should try to wait till at least an hour before Chatzos, but if you don't have time, or if you're the type that you really have a hard time going to the mikveh when there's lines, and you really want to wake up early, so you could do it in the morning also. Okay, so that's Erev Rosh Hashanah. Now let's dive into Rosh Hashanah itself. The night of Rosh Hashanah, after davening, there's a minig to say Lashana Tova Tikasev, to wish everyone Lashana Tova Tikasev, to wish them a nice good year. Now, this is only on the first night. The second day and the second night, it's customary to say good Yom Tov. So the Magen Avraham says you should say Lashana Tova Tikasev Hesei Chasem, that you should say, may you have be written and be sealed in for a good year. The reason is because the Gemara tells us that Tzadikim, that on Rosh Hashanah, tzaddikim are judged and sealed for a good life right away. Rosh Hashanah are judged and sealed for a bad, for death. And Beinanim are waiting for Yom Kippur. So the Magen Avraham says, we want to treat everyone like a tzaddik, and we say that you should be written and sealed on that day. The Vilna Gaon, this is just Agav, the Vilna Gaon actually was against saying V'sei Chaseim. He said you have to say V'sei Chaseiv. No one is sealed on tzaddikim. Even tzaddikim are not sealed on Rosh Hashanah. They wait until Yom Kippur. So what's going on? So the answer is very simple, and it's a fundamental shaila, and that is all the Rishonim ask the same shaila. It's the Taisus on the Daf in Rosh Hashanah, and the Ran and the Ramban and the Rajba and the Ritva. They all ask the same shaila. The Gemara tells us that tzaddikim are judged and sealed for life on Rosh Hashanah, and Rosh Hashanah are judged and sealed for death on Rosh Hashanah. So the question obviously is, there are tzaddikim that die, and there are Rosh Hashanah that live. So how does that work? So the Ramban and the Ran and the Rajba, they all say the same answer, which is, tzaddikim in this context doesn't mean tzaddikim. Tzaddikim just means innocent, meaning they were found to be righteous in judgment. If a Rasha has to live this year, for whatever reason that Hashem feels that he has to live in order to use his chosim up, whatever the case may be, and Hashem says that he should be sealed for a year of life, then this year he was considered a tzaddik, not in action, but in judgment. And vice versa, you could have a tzaddik in action who, for whatever reason, has to die this year, then he's considered a rasha in judgment. But Taisus disagrees. Taisus says that when the Gemara says that a tzaddik is judged and sealed for life, it means l'chai olam haba. He's judged whether he will get a share in the world to come. Meaning, this judgment is not for this world. This world is a different story. We're talking about the world to come. And for the world to come, righteous people are judged and sealed in Rosh Hashanah. And Rosh Hashanah are judged and sealed for death, for no Olam Haba on Rosh Hashanah. So the question is, according to Taisvis, when are we judged for this world? If Rosh Hashanah, the judgment is for the next world, then when is the judgment for this world? So the Gra says, according to Taisvis, all judgment for this world begins on Rosh Hashanah and is sealed on Yom Kippur, whether you're a tzaddik or a rasha or a beinoni. That's the case. Meaning for Olam Haba in Yonim, that's Rosh Hashanah, where this seal happens on Rosh Hashanah. For Olam Hazeh, all things are sealed in Yom Kippur, no matter who you are. So according to the Gra, I guess when you say Lashana Tov Tikasev, you're wishing someone a good year physically. So therefore, you can't say V'sei Chasem because nobody's sealed on you on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, it's just an interesting thing. But the minhag is to say V'sei Chasem. On the night of Rosh Hashanah, first of all, the minhag is to dip the challah in honey. And that, for a lot of people, follows through till Hashanah Rabbah. Some through Shmini Atzeres. It's still customary to either dip the challah in salt as well, or to at least have salt on the table. You should at least have salt on the table, because bris melach, that salt, always has to be on the table when you're eating bread. The night of Rosh Hashanah, after we wash, we eat simonim, the signs for a good year, the apple dipped in honey, dates, pomegranates, leeks, the head of a fish, the head of meat, and we say yihi ratzon, accompanying it, davening for a good year. Now, obviously, it goes without saying, this is not superstition. The ikkar is the davening. The ikkar is to daven to have a good year. We don't actually believe that if you eat an apple, you have a good year. It's that if you eat an apple and you want to have a good year and you daven for a good year, then the tefillah might help you. Now, there's two shilas when it comes to simanim. When do you say the yihi ratzon? Right? Let's say you have you make the bracha eitz, and then you have to say yihi ratzon. The common custom is to say the bracha of eitz, take a bite of the fruit, then say the yihi ratzon after you've already eaten from the fruit, because to say the yihi ratzon after the bracha before the bite would be a hefsek. The minhag of Chabad actually is they say the bracha, they say the yihi ratzon, and then they take a bite. But outside of the minhag Chabad, the custom is say the yiratzon, say the bracha, take a bite of the fruit, then say yihi ratzon. Or for a vegetable where there is no bracha, because we don't recite brachas on vegetables during a meal, you just say the yihi ratzon and take a bite. Now, when it comes to the fruit, the common custom, obviously, is you have to make a bracha, even though it's during a meal, because fruit requires a bracha during a meal as well. So usually on the table, you have an apple and you have a date. So the question is, which fruit? You're only going to make one bracha of eitz. So which fruit requires the bracha? So this is a debate amongst the Rishonim. The Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Yud Aleph brings down two opinions. The common shita, Rav Avdya Sefer Shlomo Zalman, Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, stam that, you know, every halacha brook on brachas is that if you have two fruits in front of you, even if you enjoy one fruit more than the other, the rule is the one that has kadima is the fruit of the seventh species, the shivas aminim. Even though I like apples more than dates, you have to make the bracha on the date. So the common custom is the one bracha of a eitz is going to be said on the date, and the apple will be covered. However, the minhag of Chabad, amongst other people, this is not just Chabad, many have the custom to actually make the bracha on the apple itself, and not on the date, and to have the bracha on the apple cover the date. Now, that's the opinion of the Rambam brought down in Shulchan Aruch. Although that's not the standard opinion, there is definitely what to rely on, that if you have two fruits in front of you, even if one is Shivas Amin, and we go with the fruit that you prefer, and the average person prefers an apple to dates, especially because it's part of our culture, apple dipped in honey. So therefore, if you want to make the bracha on the apple, you have what to rely on, but the Paiskim advise that if you're going to do that, leave the date in the kitchen. That way it's not in front of you at the time. So when you made the bracha on the apple, you covered the date because you knew it was coming, but if it wasn't in front of you, you have no conflict because there's only one fruit in front of you, and that's the apple. So either make the bracha on the date. If you want to make the bracha on the apple, you have what to rely on, but then leave the date in the other room, or the pomegranate in the other room, so that no bracha of the Shivas Aminim is in the room in front of you. Okay, so now let's jump to the day of Rosh Hashanah. So I was thinking just the shilas. The only real shiloh that comes up during davening is the aron is constantly being opened. If you look in the aron scroll, open the aron, close the aron, open the aron, close the aron. So the question is, do you have to stand up when the aron is open? So it's definitely customary to stand up when the aron is open if you're able to. The Taz writes that you don't have to, according to the Taz, because he says although the aron is open, the Sefer Torah is still in its makom, in its reshus. And because it's still in its place, even though you see it, you don't have to stand up. It says the Taz, it's customary to stand up. The Panim Meiris disagrees. The Panim Meiris says you have to stand up if you're in an area of the shul where you could actually see the Sefer Torah. So if you're sitting in front of the Aron, you have to stand up when the Aron's open. If you're to the side and you can't see the Sefer Torah, then you don't have to, but it's customary. So it's either obligatory when you're standing in front, when you're in front of the aron, or just customary. But like I said, it's customary to stand up. It's definitely something that if you, unless you have really bad knees or a bad back, you really should be standing up when the Sefer Torah is, when the aron is open. Okay, now let's jump into the shofar. I'm going to mention some of the halachas when it comes to the shofar. And like I said, if there's any questions, you could always email me, avizakatinsky@gmail.com. But till then, we'll try to cover all the halachas of shofar that I can, at least the ones that are most pertinent. The first shiloh that you come across is eating before the shofar. This is a very big debate. This is a huge debate amongst the Paiskim. Rav Kiveger was against eating before the shofar. Rav Henkin famously, Mamish Mulchama, against eating before the shofar. Now here's the thing. A lot of people think that you have to eat before the shofar because you don't want to be fasting. Which is true. You don't want to be fasting in Rosh Hashanah. So when you wake up in the morning, have a cup of water before davening. So you're not fasting. The question is, are you allowed to eat? So here's the deal. The halacha is that before performing a mitzvah, you're not allowed to have a meal. So right off the bat, before performing a mitzvah, we don't allow you to eat a meal because we're afraid that you get so lost in the meal you won't come to do the mitzvah. That's true not just for shofar, that's true for lulav, that's true for megillah, that's true for mincha, ma'ariv, lighting candles for menorah, all these things. You're not allowed to eat a meal. So you definitely can't eat a meal before shofar. The question is, can I eat? It's called te'ima. Eat a little bit. Have a kazayis. A cup of coffee, a cup of tea, some soda, some water, orange juice, some fruit. Not a meal. Just a kazayis of not a beya, not a keseves. Just a kazayis. Just one, you know, 2 or 3 ounces of cake and some drinks and some fruit. So usually before performing a mitzvah, we allow you to do a te'ima. Rav Kiveger, though, felt that because shofar is once a year and it's biblical, you have to be more strict and we don't allow you any te'ima. So Rav Kiveger was against eating anything before shofar. However, the common custom amongst many shuls is to have a break, and they do allow you to eat. And that's fine. They definitely have what to rely on. There are many paiskim who felt that a te'ima is allowed before shofar. But there's a couple of things you have to be careful about. First of all, Rav Shlomo Zalman used to say that if you're feeling fine, you shouldn't eat. I mean, just because there's a break, if you're feeling hungry and you're feeling weak and your shul ends at 2 or 3 o'clock, fine. But if you're the type of shul that ends at 12:45, like a quick shtibel, and you're feeling fine, then it's definitely better not to, put yourself into a shayla. Number two, you have to make sure not to eat a lot. Have a kezias of cake, and that's it. And then you want to eat as much fruit and as much drinks as you want, but not to have too much. Number three, you have to make kiddush. According to most rabbanim, to 99.9% of shittas, you have to make kiddush. Once shacharis is over, you can't eat until you hear kiddush. So you have to hear kiddush. Now, there's a minig of bells chassidim in Square and Vizhnitz, perhaps, and I was told that the shtibel in Brooklyn by Rav Matel Zilber Stichiner, they also do this. There's a minig among some chassidim where they just have coffee and tea, no cake, no kiddush, just coffee and tea. That's a very big shaila of why that's allowed. That the Rav Yecheskel of Shinova has a heter, and the Rav Aaron of Bells has a heter. If that's part of your Masera, fine. But if it's not part of your Masera, you have to hear kiddush. Okay. That's when it comes to eating before tekiyas. Now, when it comes to the amount of shofar blast that you have to hear, the Gemara tells us that it says regarding Tishrei, the blowing shofar on Tishrei, two by Rosh Hashanah and one by Yovel, it says the word Trua three times. The Gemara makes a drasha that all blasts on Tishrei are the same, meaning that Rosh Hashanah you have to blow a Trua three times. The Gemara then continues and teaches that anytime there's a Trua, it requires a tekiyah before and after. So in other words, according to the biblical mitzvah, you have to hear nine blasts. A tekiyah, a trua, a tekiyah, a tekiyah, a trua, a tekiyah, and a tekiyah, a trua, a tekiyah. That's biblical. That's nine. The problem is, the Gemara tells us, we're not 100% sure what a trua is. A trua could be a shvarim, a trua in the Gemara. A trua can be a trua, or a trua can be a shvarim trua. So because we're not sure, we do all of them. So instead of just nine, it turns into 30. So instead of a tkia trua tkia, we do a tkia shvarim trua tkia three times. Maybe that's the 10, that's the nine biblical sounds, and trua and a tkia and a shvarim as well. So we do 30. So nine are biblical, and 30 are rabbinic. Now it's customary to do 100, that's because it's a minig, to do the same amount of shofar blasts of cries as the mother of Sisera. According to some medrash, it's the amount of time Sarah cried when she heard that Yitzchak was going to the Akedah. That's customary. But nine is biblical and 30 is rabbinic. Now, according to, there's a very interesting shaila amongst the Rishayim, Rav Haiga and was asked Akasha. The Gemara tells us that you have to hear three truas on Rosh Hashanah and six tekiyas, so that's nine blasts. And the Gemara said, we don't know what a trua is. Is a trua a shvarim? Is a trua a trua? Is a trua a shvarim trua? So the Rav Haigain asks Akasha. So we do all three. We do all 30. So the Rav Haigain asks, what did they do before that? How could you have a shayla about what it is? What did they do historically? So Rav Haigain had a famous shita, a very interesting shita, and that is he holds, really, any of these sounds are yotza. It's not really a suffix. We know what they are. They're all good. Meaning that the second you do nine blasts, you're yotze, doraisa, and derabbanan. There's not a suffix. The reason why we do all 30 and we cover our bases is because it's just simply because it's a bad optic that you go to one shul, they do shvarim, meaning it used to be that all these sounds were kosher. But in the times of the Gemara, you go to one shul, they would do shvarim only. One shul would do trua only. One shul would do shvarim trua only. And it just didn't look good. So the Gemara instituted that we do all of them. But really, you're yotza. Other Rishonim disagree, and they say, no, it's a legitimate shaila. It's a legitimate shaila, and until you do all 30, you're not yotza. Because it's a suffix, whether you're yotza. And this comes up later on. But at the end of the day, biblical is 9. Rabbinic is 30, and it's customary for 100. Just to mention some halachas. From the time the shofar, the person makes the bracha, from the first shofar blast until the end of the tekiyas, at the end of Musaf, you're not allowed to talk. That we all know, you're not allowed to talk. Now the halacha is that after the first 30 blasts, so your yotze biblical and your yotze rabbinic also, the first 30 blasts are called kiyas de miyushev. After the first 30 blasts, you're still not allowed to talk, but you're allowed to daven. You're allowed to say in yonei tefillah. That's how we daven. Even though you'd say, isn't that a hefsek? It's not a hefsek, that's allowed. That's why the Paiskim point out that after the first 30 blasts, you're allowed to say Asher Yotzer also if you went to the bathroom. Now, during the first 30, in between the first, each set, there's 30 comprised of three sets of 9, 9, and 12. So the first three, there's in between each set, there's a Yihi Ratzon found in the Siddur. It's a very big debate amongst the Paiskim whether you're allowed to say that Yihi Ratzon. According to some, you're allowed to speak only, even regarding tefillah, it's only allowed after all 30 blasts are said. That's the opinion of the Derech Chaim. So according to Derech Chaim, you're not allowed to say the Hirotzons, because you're not Yotze yet. Until all 30, you're not done yet. It's a legitimate suffix, like the Rishonim say, until all 30, you're not Yotze. How could you talk in middle of doing the mitzvah? After 30, you're already Yotze, and the rest is customary, fine. You could say in Yonei tefillah, but during the first 30, you're not Yotze yet. So how could you say anything? So according to Derech Chaim, you're not allowed to say anything, no Yihi Ratzon, no nothing. However, the Magen Avraham, the Arizal, others disagree, and they say that you could say the Yihi Ratzon after each set. They probably hold like Rav Haigon, according to Avad Yosef, they probably hold like Rav Haigon, that once you say the first 10, you're Yotze. The rest is just customary. It's fine, but it's like I said, you follow your personal custom. Women are exempt from the Shofar, because it's a mitzvah sheshes man grama, it's a time-based mitzvah, but it's customary for women to accept upon themselves to hear the shofar. Now, here's the following shaila. What happens if a person couldn't get to shul? So if a person couldn't get to shul, well, it's a chayla, someone who's sick, stam, a woman couldn't get to shul, a man couldn't get to shul, so it's customary for the Baal Tokeya to go and blow for them. So the question is, who recites the bracha? So the halacha is, it depends if it's a man or a woman. If the Baal Tokeya, who already heard the Tekiyas and Shul, he already blew the Shofar, so he's blowing just to be motzi others, if he's blowing for a man, the Baal Tokeya can say the brachos. I mean, it might be better for the person who's sick to say the brachos, but a lot of times they don't feel comfortable reciting, they're not well enough to recite the brachos, so the Baal Tokeya can say the brachos for them. So if a Baal Tokeya is going into a hospital room, if it's a man in the room, he could say the bracha for the man and blow the Shofar. However, if he's blowing Shofar for a woman who didn't hear Shofar yet, he's not allowed to say brachas for her. She has to say it, and if she can't say it, then no brachas are said. You just blow without a bracha. So when you're blowing for a woman, no bracha is said. By the Baal Tokeya, only the woman herself recites the bracha. Now, if the woman is Svardi, no bracha is said at all, because this is a famous debate whether women can recite a bracha on a time-based mitzvah that they're optionally doing, like Lulav and Esrig, sitting in the sukkah, blowing shofar. Ashkenazim feel that they could, Sfardim feel that they cannot. So when you're blowing, so in summation, if a person is going around blowing for others, if there's a man in the room, the Baal Tokeya can say the brachas for him. If it's a woman in the room that's listening, if it's a woman only, then the woman has to say the bracha. And if the woman is Sfardi, no bracha is said. You just blow without saying a bracha. A couple more things. You have to hear the entire tekiyah from beginning to end. So a lot of times towards the end of the tekiyah, especially like a tekiyah gedolah, people begin to daven and move on. You can't. You have to hear the entire thing. Another thing is just to avoid is do not stand outside during the tekiyas. If there's a kid outside, bring them in, because once they're outside, it's a shaila of havara. What do they hear? Do they hear the shofar? Do they hear the echo? And it's just a whole mess. Bring them into shul. The rest of davening, the only other thing that I could think of is aleinu. It's customary to bow on the ground. We bring our knees and our face to the ground by aleinu. So if you have a stone floor, you have to cover your face. You're rabbinically obligated to cover your face when you're kneeling on a stone floor. I say face because really, people just put it by their knees. It's the real obligation from the Sefer Yisrael, the Sherish HaVoiden, Mati Ephraim, is to cover your face, not your knees. So you have to cover your face. The ikar is the face. If you're on a carpeted floor, you probably don't have to, but it's still customary to do so. Chabad doesn't, but the Matei Ephraim says you should. So it's still customary. So again, when you're kneeling on the floor, you put something between your face and the floor. Whether women kneel or not is debatable. Rav Soloveitchik had a whole shekel Torah of why the custom in Europe was women do not kneel on the floor. But if women want to kneel on the floor, they definitely have it to rely on. It doesn't really matter. Either way, you have yesh v'yesh. It's different minhagim. Now, sleeping on the day of Rosh Hashanah is really frowned upon. The Ramah says that you should not sleep on Rosh Hashanah. You have a sleepy year. Now, if someone has a headache or they're not feeling well and they need to sleep, they definitely have what to rely on, because first of all, they're not doing it for pleasure. They're doing it because they're not feeling well. And in addition, the Arizal famously held that after Chatzos Hayom, after midday, you could sleep. So if the Arizal slept, many Rabbanim feel, then it can't be a problem. Other Rabbanim, the Mateh Elef, did point out, Elef HaMagin, did point out that halavai, we should accomplish what we do while we're awake when the Arizal slept. So his sleeping was an avoid in and of itself. But it's generally better to avoid sleeping on Rosh Hashanah, unless you're not feeling well. But I'll say this, staying up and schmoozing and staying up and playing card games and wasting time and talking about nothing, that's not better than sleeping. The main point is to learn and to say Tehillim. Many people finish the entire Sefer Tehillim on Rosh Hashanah. On the first day of Rosh Hashanah after Mincha, or before Mincha if you don't have time, it's customary to go do Tashlich. Tashlich is said by going to a water, a body of water. Now, if you can get up close to the water, good. If not, you could stand far away where you could see the water. Now, if you're in an area that has no water, like in Yerushalayim, what they do is they go to a bucket of water. They fill a bucket of water, and they say it by a running water. That's what they do. Some people just turn the sink on and say Tashlich. People bring bread to Tashlich. That's not allowed. You're not allowed to feed animals on Shabbos and Yom Tov. You're not allowed to feed a stray animal. Unless it's an animal you're obligated to feed, like you own it. So to feed fish on Rosh Hashanah would not be allowed. So you cannot bring bread to Tashlich. If you want to, then say Tashlich during the week, but not on Rosh Hashanah. But it's better to say it on Rosh Hashanah. And if you can't, if you couldn't make it to Tashlich on Rosh Hashanah, you could do it all Seir Simei Tshuva, but it's better on Rosh Hashanah. The last thing is, the second night of Rosh Hashanah, we say Shachianu as part of the Kiddush. But because it's a shaila of whether we should say Shachianu, we like to have a new fruit on the table. Have in mind that the Shachianu should cover the new fruit as well. And then, right after Kiddush, before bread, you sit down and have a little bit of the fruit. So don't have in mind just the fruit, because you haven't really in mind the Iker is to have in mind the Yom Tif. But have in mind that the bracha of Shachianu should cover the new fruit as well to hedge your bets. And then right after Kiddush, before bread, you sit down. The first night when you're eating all the simanim, that's after you wash. The second night, it's before you wash. Now, if you don't have a new fruit, you still say Shachianu. But it's better if you could, if I have a new fruit. All questions can be sent to avizakutinsky@gmail.com. It's avizakutinsky@gmail.com.